This is Mike Corey from ESPN, and you're listening to the Sports Objective Podcast, the unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
Welcome into the Sports Objective and our Pirate Preview. The Pirates, we're headed to Tampa to take on the South Florida Bulls on Thursday night. And right now to preview that matchup, very excited to welcome back into the show the play-by-play voice for USF, and that's Jim Whitehall. Jim, we appreciate your time this afternoon.
Bubba, always a pleasure. Good to talk to you again.
Definitely. It's been a while with the craziness of the world over the last couple of years and games getting canceled and so forth. But as you take a look at this matchup on the Pirates, 12-12 overall, USF is 7-17. But East Carolina, outside of the victory at Tulsa recently, has just really struggled to score. That's improved a bit with the return of Brandon Suggs. But, you look at this matchup, with USF's defensive numbers, this could be, you know, the first team to 55 or 60 wins.
Well, we played a game about a week ago, beat Temple 52-49, and we were looking with about 5 or 6 minutes to go in the game to see how many times USF had won games and scored in the 40s. So, yeah, it might be first one to 50 wins this game. USF does not score a lot of points. They're in the bottom five in the nation in points per game. So anything out of the 50s for USF is an offensive explosion.
Now, off the air, we were talking about the craziness of the college basketball world in terms of the transfer portal, and I would love to see some of the numbers nationally. There can't be, you know, here at East Carolina, we're, you know, very familiar with major roster overhauls. Coach Dooley executed one prior to year two, and he executed another prior to his fourth season in Greenville. But the Pirates, I think, had seven new members of the roster this year. But the Bulls, what you said, lost nine to the portal, but got eight.
Yeah, it was kind of a strange offseason with that extra year of eligibility. And, you know, a lot of guys could transfer, or everybody could transfer without sitting out a year. It basically became a free agency in college basketball. It was really that in all the sports, but I think more so in basketball because one guy can make such a big impact on a team. I want to say the number was close to 1,600 players transferred in the offseason. And USF got hit pretty hard with nine guys leaving. That wasn't the worst in the country. I know one team lost all 15 players on their roster, which is, you know, unbelievable. But you got to rebuild any way you can. So for USF, they went into the transfer portal. They brought in a lot of guys. They're extremely young. They basically traded in some guys like David Collins and Justin Brown that had been four-year players. Michael Durr, their center, was a three-year player. Alexis Yetna was a three-year player. And they got young guys. So most of those guys are technically freshmen or sophomore for eligibility. Again, they could be in their second year or even their third year, but eligibility-wise, they got a whole lot of time left to play at USF.
Yeah, we were talking about, you know, some of those guys. You mentioned Collins, obviously, to play here recently against Duke, and that was so, so publicized with social media and just the craziness of that play. And then you talk about Yetna, what a stud he was during his time there in Tampa, and now he's with Seton Hall. You have Castaneda up with Akron, who's had a lot of success in recent years. And then you mentioned some other names, the young man who's also with Indiana.
Yeah, Michael Durr actually transferred from USF to Virginia Tech. And he was there for just a short amount of time, maybe a week. And they have an all-conference center at Virginia Tech. And so he realized real quick he wasn't going to play. And he was in discussions to come back to USF. And USF really wanted to keep him because they were pretty thin on the low block. So he was close to coming back. And then he had some ties. And an assistant coach at Indiana was from the Georgia area, which is where Mike is from. And he's from Atlanta. And so he said, why don't you come here to Indiana? So he said, well, wow, I'll go to the Big Ten. I'll have a chance to play there. Well, he got there, and he didn't realize that they had an All-American center in front of him. So his time will come, but he's not seeing as much playing time as he would have certainly at USF. But he's just one of those guys. Some other guys, Rayshon Williams is at Radford. Justin Brown, left-handed three-point shooter, went to UAB. Madutta Ketch was a kid that didn't play a whole lot here. Very talented. He's gone to Detroit Mercy, and he's gone crazy. He's shooting 50% from the floor, high 40s from three. He's averaging about 15 a game and 8 rebounds. He's done sensational. And then Luke Anderson, a kid who was at Iowa State and transferred to USF, he transferred out, and he's gone down a level to Division II.
Now, so taking a look at this ball club, as I mentioned in the open, 7-17, they've lost three in a row. Last night on Tuesday evening, fell there at home at the Yingling Center to Tulane, and we'll talk more about the league in general. What a job Ron Hunter has done with the Green Wave, but last night, despite knocking down 8 three-pointers, fell by 19.
Yeah, for us to make 8 three-pointers and to lose by that margin is really out of the ordinary. We are the worst three-point shooting team in the country, number 350 out of 350, and it really hasn't been close to number 349 all year. I know at one point about a week and a half ago I did the numbers, and the Bulls going into the game that night needed to go 11 for 11 from three. And if they did that, then they would catch Green Bay as number 349. Well, of course, USF didn't do that at night. I haven't run the numbers. It's a little too depressing for me to do that every game. But they made 8 last night. They made 7 the night before that. They're still in last, but we're trying to close that gap on number 349.
So, you know, give us a quick look at the season on the whole outside of the shooting woes, 37.7% from the floor, 24.8 from three, as you referenced, just 66% from the charity stripe. But do have some very good defensive stats, and I know that's something that Joe Dooley on his weekly radio show on Monday night really talked about, how USF can defend, and that's, you know, helped produce some wins. And then not that there wasn't a better than normal offensive performance, but like the victory over UCF, the Knights have had a very solid season, and the Bulls were able to beat the Knights there in Tampa, what, by about 25 points?
Yeah, absolutely dominated UCF. That's a rivalry game. There was a lot of emotion in the building that night, big crowd. It's amazing what happens when you make a few shots from three-point land, which is what they did. That's the way this team is capable of playing. I think that's the way that Brian Gregory, the head coach, thought this team was going to play all year. When he brought in players in the transfer portal, the 8 new players, it was really led by Javon Green, who was a 1,200-point score at George Mason. He had a couple 30-point games, high 30-point games, could really score the ball at George Mason. His shooting has not translated here to the American Conference. He's averaging about 9.5 points, but, you know, he'll go for 15 one game, and then he'll go for 3 the next game. Just because, I don't know if it's the shooting has rubbed off on him. His shooting has been down this year in the low 30s. Again, way out of the ordinary for him. But again, back to the UCF game, they played the way that they thought they would be playing all year long, shooting the ball well. For Brian Gregory, his theme has always been defense and rebounding will travel. So you go on the road in a hostile environment, yeah, you might not shoot well, but as long as you can guard people and keep them from getting offensive rebounds, you're probably going to be in the game. Well, for USF, they have just shot the ball so poorly that it's wiped out any of that defense and rebounding. I mean, Tulane did not get an offensive rebound in the game last night. This is my 25th season. I don't ever remember doing a game where a team didn't get one offensive rebound in the contest, and that's what happened last night. But again, if you shoot so bad, the name of the game is how many points do you have on the scoreboard, and if you can't get the ball through that 18-inch cast iron hoop, then you're not going to win the game.
Yeah, it's just been one of those years for Brian Gregory's club. I mean, a couple mind-boggling numbers there. You make those 8 threes that we already referenced, and then you don't allow an offensive rebound to the opposition and still lose by 19 points. Pretty head-scratching.
Yeah, it's been that way all year long. I mean, we had a game against Temple, 52-49 win, and Javon Green hits a three-pointer with 20 seconds to go. which was their only made three of the game. They were in danger of a 200-plus game streak without a made three, but he knocks that one down. And then the game before that, which was the game after that, Cincinnati, they only made one three-pointer in the game. So you pick the game, and I can basically tell you what happened from beyond the stripe, and then that tells you how they did that night. So when they went to Hawaii, three games in Hawaii, shot the ball pretty well, were in all three games, beat Hawaii out there, played BYU very close, lost to Wyoming as well. But it just really hasn't been consistent all year. And when Brian Gregory got guys from the portal, his main objective was let's get some free throw shooting and let's get some three-point shooting. And really, neither one has happened, and much to his amazement, by the way.
Now, with so many new pieces, first, let's start off with a guy who actually had been on rosters in years past, and that's Caleb Murphy, 6'4", playing nearly 32 minutes per ball game, averaging 11.7 points, a little over three rebounds, and also three assists. So tell us about his game, and, you know, he's obviously doing some things maybe off the dribble, and because he's not shot the three well.
No, he's made his first 2 3-pointers of the season over the last, I think, 10 days. He's 2 for 19 from there right now, and teams really have sagged off him, making him or daring him to shoot the three, and he was to the point where he wasn't taking them at all. I will say this kid is special. He is just different. It's USF doesn't get kids that are top 75, top 50 kids very often. He's the highest recruit in the history of the school. I think he was number 56 in the country when he shocked everybody and came to USF. Again, another Georgia kid. But he just looks different than other guys on the floor because of the things he can do. We were at Wichita State on Saturday. He's on a breakaway. Guy flashes in front of him about the free throw line, full speed. He goes behind his back. And not on the dribble, he picks it up and goes behind his back and then lays it in on a finger roll over the front rim. It's just one of those type things. And his mid-range game is spot on. It's tremendous. Again, because he doesn't shoot the three very well. He's 6'4". He's extremely long. He can get to the basket. He can block shots at the point guard spot. And he can rise up over a lot of centers once he gets to the rim. But his specialty is off the dribble, stop and pop from about 16, 17, 18 feet. It's borderline unstoppable. And if he makes that, which he typically does, you know, he's going to give you 12 to 15 points. But again, because we don't score very much, we have not had a player score 20 points in a game this season. We've had three different players score 19, but it's almost unheard of to not have somebody luck into a 20-point night.
Outside of Murphy, I know you have at least two, maybe three guys averaging 9-plus points per game. So tell us about some of those other options where, yes, it's limited scoring, but you know, some of those other threats.
Yeah, Javon Green is one of those, the kid from George Mason. He is a nice shooter, a lefty. It just looks prettier when lefties shoot, in my opinion. But he's a great defender, again, long and lanky. He leads the team in steals. He's lightning quick with his hands. He's a good finisher. He's got that little teardrop in the lane that he likes. And then Jameer Chaplin, the small forward, is another player that came back. He's played more games in a USF uniform than anybody else on the roster, and he's only played in about 63 games. So that gives you an idea how young this roster is. But Chap was kind of up and down, started to get some more playing time last year. Another Georgia kid, as is Green. But this season he's really taken off, and it didn't happen until he got to conference play. He had about five games in a row where he scored double figures, including a couple of career highs with 17. He can pretty much do it all. He can defend, he can block shots at 6'5" or 6". He can dunk like crazy, really gets off the floor, mid-range game. He has struggled to shoot the three along with everybody else. But he just does a little bit of everything, and he's around 9 points per game now. And then everybody else is a kind of a hodgepodge of, you know, plug and play. Although there's a guy that's really emerging as of late by the name of Corey Walker Jr. He went to Tennessee last year and broke his toe right before the season started. Once he got healthy, then he got COVID. And in his words, it was just a mess. Everything just seemed to go wrong for him there. Top 75 player out of Jacksonville. And he just decided, I'm going to come back to the state of Florida. He knew some folks on the staff. USF got involved with him, and he transferred to USF. And really, over the last 4 or 5 games, he's been a really outstanding player. And you can see how good he is. He needs to work on his body. He's still a little doughy maybe. And he missed the first four or five games of the year because he had a broken bone in his knee in the offseason. So injuries have kind of hampered him a little bit. But you can really start to see flashes. And again, when you start talking about those top 75 players, they just look a little different than everybody else.
Obviously, you've had the opportunity to prepare for tomorrow night's broadcast. So just talk about your impressions of Joe Dooley's ball club. Don't know how much you've had a chance to watch this year. But, you know, Vance Jackson coming on to the scene out of the transfer portal after having been at UConn, New Mexico, and Arkansas. He's really lived up to the hype, although he's kind of, you know, struggled with consistency at times. But he's been tremendous on the whole, shooting about 43% from three. You had the Pirates, after having been competitive in the first 17 games of the season, went through a tough five or six game stretch without Brandon Suggs. Where things were really a struggle, especially offensively. Brandon Suggs brings so much, even though he's not an excellent shooter. You know, he brings things off the dribble and then creating offense with his defensive prowess. But, you know, what's your take on the Pirates?
Well, some of those games, or some of those guys that you just named, are very familiar names to us. You know, when you start talking about Robinson White and J.J. Miles and Newton, and those names are familiar names to us and guys that contributed a year ago. I did not realize Jackson's numbers were as good as they were until I started doing my paperwork a little bit this morning. I'm really surprised at his three-point shooting. And to be honest with you, that's the kind of guy that has given the Bulls trouble this year. Jariah Horn at Tulsa went off against USF because of a stretch four. Kind of a center body that doesn't play the traditional center position. Kevin Cross at Tulane last night went off. Same type body, 6'8", 6'9", you know, 225, 230. Too quick for the bigs of USF. Russell Chiwa is the center at 7 feet tall, 280 pounds. And then they have a backup center that's 6'9", 260. But neither of those guys can move the way they need to guard the guys I just mentioned. So I really think that Jackson might be the toughest matchup for USF. And then, of course, talking with Brian Gregory last night in our postgame show, he's extremely concerned with Newton because he knows that guy is very capable of going off. I think it's going to be one of those games where both teams shoot about 38%. It's going to end up being just like it always is at the Yuengling Center, where the last two games between these two have gone to overtime, and then the one before that was a two-point game. I'm looking at your typical 58-56 East Carolina USF game.
Yeah, certainly under the circumstances, you know, based on the history and what the teams have done recently, it's hard to, you know, feel differently. But like you say, I think guys like a Vance Jackson, 6'9", that can do everything that he can do, that's kind of the X factor going into tomorrow night's matchup. But, you know, kind of shifting gears, we've talked about while discussing this matchup, opponents like Tulane, also UCF. We have not referenced Houston and SMU, the teams that are at the top of the league, starting with SMU. They played Houston recently and then won a thriller. I believe that game was at Moody Coliseum, and they'll have the rematch coming here in a couple weeks. So, you know, what's your take around the league and some of the things that have been going on?
Well, we've played we had a stretch there where we played Houston twice, SMU twice, and UCF all in the span of about 2 weeks, which was the toughest part of the season. I'll start with SMU. Obviously, it starts with Kendrick Davis. The Bulls had actually done a really good job on him defensively through about the first 18 minutes of both games. He didn't have a point, I know, in the first matchup until there was about 2 minutes to go in the first half, and then he ended up finishing with about 12 or 13. And then the same thing in the second game. The thing with Kendrick Davis that I like is two things. Number one, he can break you down off the dribble. So if you don't stay in front of him, it's a lot of trouble. He either gets to the basket or when the help comes, he finds the open guy every time. He's got a nice little turnaround jump shot from about 15, 16 feet, which at his size, you don't think he's going to be able to get that off, and he always does. And then he's got a nice complimentary cast around him. And then from Houston, I mean, they just suffocate you defensively. That's where USF has run into all kinds of problems. They're extremely long at the guard spot. They're long at the forward spot. Fabian White feels like he just signed a new 3-year deal. I swear he's been there since the early 90s. You know, he's 6'8" as a forward and kind of a glue guy that makes them go. They've lost a couple of pieces, and I know that's why Kelvin Sampson has been mentioned as a potential Coach of the Year candidate in the American. I personally like Ron Hunter at Tulane. I think the job they've done and he has done with that program, which has just been morbid for so long, to even be in the discussion for a first-round bye in the American Conference Tournament, to me, jumps off the page. But the league is going to go through Houston and SMU, and more than likely it's still going to go through Houston.
Yeah, no doubt. Two tremendous teams there. Be interesting to see if SMU makes its way into the tournament. Certainly looks to be on the right track at this point, for sure. But, kind of going back to what you were saying about Kendrick Davis, not to get off on a tangent, but Pirates held Kendrick Davis to 7 points, 1 out of 8 from the floor. And then, you had other folks go off and just have tremendous ball games, like Vandermeil, knocked down 6 3-pointers.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is they've got other weapons. And for Davis, the thing that I felt really got him going against us was he wasn't scoring the ball. So he said, all right, fine, I'll just create for other people. And that's what makes him so dangerous. And again, it only helps if you got guys that can make shots. If he's setting people up and they're clanking them off the iron all the time, well, then it doesn't do you any good. A guy that's very similar to Davis is Jalen Cook from Tulane, who really had a good game against us down in New Orleans. He didn't do as much last night, but again, at 6 feet tall, 205 pounds, the guy's a bulldog, and he can go through people. He can go around people super quick. I think he and Davis are the two most exciting players in the league, and I really don't even think it's close.
Final thing for you, obviously, Brian Gregory's had some success there in Tampa. Tough year this year. You know, where do things stand with Coach Gregory in terms of his contract and so forth?
Yeah, so he was looking at this year and then next year on a contract, and then that was it. And there was a lot of discussions. He had told me publicly and privately that he was working on an extension that goes all the way back to the 2019-2020 year, where the Bulls won the CBI. I'm trying to think if that was 18-19 or 19-20. They won the CBI. He had 24 wins, set a school record. So the administration was already working on a contract extension at that time. It kind of bled into the next year when COVID wiped the season out, so they couldn't really do a contract extension that time. In fact, coaches on campus took pay cuts, as many coaches did around the country. It just didn't look good to be collecting all your money when they're laying off 40, 50 people inside the athletic department. And then they didn't do it again last year because COVID was such an issue. So they finally got it done. And in fact, Michael Kelly, the vice president of athletics at USF, did something I've never seen an athletic department do before. And it was a blanket contract extension for every head coach in the department. Every sport, every coach got a contract extension, including Jeff Scott, the football coach. There's a lot of people who are like, how on earth is he getting a contract extension? They've beaten two FBS teams in the last couple of years, but he got one. Brian Gregory got his contract extension. Everybody got one. So Brian Gregory, that is, I think his contract now will pay him about $1.6 million per year, and he's set up for another couple seasons. So he's going to be safe this year. If they have a tough year next year, I've got to think that Michael Kelly's going to have to explore that situation. I love Brian Gregory. He's fantastic to work with. There's no better class act, in my opinion, in coaching than him, on and off the floor. So I hope he doesn't go anywhere, and I hope he has enough wins to stick around.
That is definitely a very interesting situation, like you mentioned, as far as the department-wide contract extension. I don't believe I've ever heard of that being done either. Do you think that's kind of, like that we saw the eligibility rules, do you think that's kind of a product of the COVID environment?
Yeah, I think so, because so many coaches, just got wrecked by COVID over not just a one-year window, but a two-year window. The transfers that happened at the end of 2 years ago, and then last year, when you're talking about, USF and a lot of teams missed 10 games during the course of the season. I remember USF didn't play for 30 some odd days and couldn't even really practice over that stretch. So again, you're talking about nearly a completely wasted season. So I think basically what Michael Kelly did there was he gave all of those coaches back a couple of years onto their contract and said, you know, we're just wiping those 2 years out. Now, there were some coaches that had tremendous success over those stretches. Denise Shilty Brown, the women's soccer coach, he's in the NCAA tournament all the time. Jose Fernandez, the women's basketball coach, he's in the NCAA tournament all the time. Didn't seem to affect them as much as some other coaches. But for Michael Kelly and for those coaches, they've got some peace of mind going forward.
No doubt about it. Definitely good for all those USF coaches. Well, Jim, we certainly appreciate your time and you coming on such short notice to break down tomorrow night's matchup there at the Yuengling Center, 7 o'clock tip-off between the Pirates and the Bulls, a game that will be broadcast on the ESPN Plus platform. But, you know, before we let you go, you know, tell folks if they want to check out the broadcast on the USF side, how they can do so.
Yeah, you go to the iHeartMedia app. We're on the app now. It's been a tremendous success for us, crystal clear for everybody around the world, iHeartMedia app, and that we have two channels dedicated to USF sports. One's called Bulls Unlimited and the other Bulls Unlimited 2. They were up all night dreaming up those sequels name. So that's how you do it. You just click on that, and it sounds awesome, and that's where we're at. So if you want to tune us in and hear your Pirates, you can do it that way as well.
Again, appreciate the visit. Always enjoy catching up and talking college basketball with you. You know, Pirate fans, if you're tuned in right now, you know, be sure to follow us on social media, on Twitter and TikTok at TheSportsOBJ, on Instagram at The Sports Objective. Like and follow us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. And remember, our show can be found pretty much anywhere podcasts are found, including but not limited to Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, SoundCloud, Spotify, and also Anchor. But for the play-by-play voice of the South Florida Bulls, Jim Lighthall, I am Bubba Rosenbaum, and you've been listening to The Sports Objective. We appreciate everyone tuning in. Take care.